Welcome to the Ballyhoo Fiber Emporium, a podcast for fiber producers and artists. I'm your host, back again, Madeline Norman, coming to you live from my car, and we'll get to that in a minute. Today, I'm featuring The Lost Episode, which is a podcast I recorded back with Brick in March after his spur-of-the-moment trip to New Mexico, and then things got hectic and I never posted it. So today we'll be featuring that, and also listen closely because there are instructions for a giveaway toward the end of the interview, conversation, what have you. Brick is in need of some extra special love right now. He's going through a hard time, so if you don't mind shouting out to him on Instagram at the.godflocker. Is it dot or underscore? You can find him. He's the Godflocker. There's no one like him. Anyway, we love you, Brick. So without further ado, let's get to this long-awaited and long-procrastinated interview. I'm sorry for the hiatus, and like I said, I'll explain that to you in more detail a little bit later. But for now, here's our conversation with Brick Walker. Let's start with your very exciting spiritual vision quest to New Mexico.
Not the biggest fan of Santa Fe. It was a little, I don't know. Things are just so different out there. Like, Santa Fe is capital. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's kind of like being at Frankfurt here, where it's like a smaller city.
Most capital cities are pretty small.
It depends, I think.
Like, but Salem is not that big in Oregon. Portland's much bigger, but
yeah. Well, I mean, it's like Louisville versus Frankfurt.
Or even Lexington versus Frankfurt.
Right.
Yeah.
Santa Fe had some stuff that was kind of cool, but I don't know, it was just too many art galleries and too many yuppies, and it was just not my thing.
Well, aside from the yuppies, I would have thought that was right up your alley.
Some of it was okay, but I was also there, like, in the low season. So, like, most people are there in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, like, more to do and more to see and all that kind of stuff. I did stop at two yarn shops in Santa Fe. One was called Yarn and Coffee.
Ooh.
And I got some fantastic hand spun there. It was like mohair locks that were coarse spun, I believe. They were all different kinds of colors. Each one was only, you know, like 2 yards or so long.
Oh, wow.
So I got like a gradient color, and I'm working on a shawl with it, which I'm not really liking now. This would be its fourth incarnation already. But I'm kind of just rolling with it at this point. And then the other one was called Miriam's Well. And Miriam, who I got to talk with for a bit, because it was just me and her in the shop for a while.
Cool.
She moved from Denmark, and she's really a weaver. So most of her stuff's weaving, but she also has a lot of knitting items as well. Funny story. We were talking about where I was from, and I said I was from Kentucky. And she said, oh, my first loom that I bought secondhand from a weaver in Berea, Kentucky.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Small world.
She was very nice.
We haven't.
I drove up and I stopped in Espanola, which is kind of halfway between Santa Fe and where I was staying in Abiquiu. And I stopped at Espanola Valley Fiber Arts Center, which was awesome, actually. Lots of small producer yarns. So the New Mexico yarn that I brought for you came from there. So they have like local alpaca and local Navajo churro, which is pretty much everywhere, and a lot of rambouillet. Those are kind of like the three that I saw the most of. Probably the next would be mohair, lots of mohair out there, llama, and then some of the long wool breeds like Cotswolds.
So they do better out there than they do here because it's a dry heat?
Dry, very dry. There was snow kind of everywhere. Supposedly, like, the week before I got there, they'd had a lot of snow. Okay, at the center, they have most of what everything is there is weaving. Because there's the rich tradition of the Navajo and their weaving traditions, and then kind of how the Spanish played into that and all that. So, pretty much everywhere's weaving. But, you know, people, the secondary thing is knitting. So, they have this big weaving studio where you can do classes. Then they also have a felting machine, so if you have fiber and stuff and you want to make big felt sheets, you can come and rent the equipment and make it. They have a dye studio that you can rent. They have all different kinds of stuff, pretty much anything fiber arts related that you could want. you can find there.
So it's like a community artist space.
It is. It's like, it's a non-for-profit. They always take donations of yarn and books and all kinds of other stuff. Some people donate fiber, and then they have their own line of yarns as well. I got a couple of skeins of that. They sell woven items and knitted items from members of the center, and so it's just really cool. I also found some natural dyes from the area that I'm going to try to use.
Oh, cool.
One should make a light yellow, one should make kind of a deep orange yellow, and one supposedly makes green. And green is super, super hard to get, so hopefully that'll work. My other fiber trek took me to Tierra Wools in Los Ojos, which is north of Abiquiu, which is where I was staying.
Did you stay there the whole time and just sort of, like,
yeah. go Well, I was radius? In Santa Fe for 3 days, and then I was in Abiquiu for a week, and then I just kind of drove everywhere else. Tierra Wools is also a big weaving studio. It took everything in me not to buy a hand-woven rug for $2,000 from there. Which, it wasn't even the most expensive one, but it was gorgeous, and I really, really wanted it.
Had you texted me, I probably would have told you that you were worth it.
I know. I was telling myself I was worth it, and I was like, no.
You're going to get a bunch of comments now about, yes, you are, you should have pulled the trigger. It's a once-in-a-lifetime experience.
It was actually woven by a man. I can't remember his... I think his last name was Martinez. Once I started picking out things that I liked, like, most of them were his. So, I did buy a small table runner that was hand-woven. It was really pretty there, and I got a couple of things of yarn, but they also do workshops for weaving and stuff like that. I bought a little spindle there and some Navajo churro wool. Just to try it out and see what it was like to spin. It was the most beautiful color I've ever seen in my life.
You mean you didn't take a spindle with you?
I didn't. I took knitting and crocheting with me and a book to read.
What?
I wasn't even planning on buying spindles or anything.
Oh, yeah, right.
But I saw this spindle and it was so pretty and I just kind of had to have it. Do you remember that little cotton spindle?
Uh-huh.
It's kind of like that one.
Hmm.
It's similarly made, but it's heavier, and the whorl is Osage orange.
Oh, okay.
So it's a nice, pretty yellow wood.
Mm-hmm.
And it was made by a local guy, so.
Cool.
It's just Southwest Weaving Supply in Taos, and I bought a couple of things of Navajo Churro and a couple of old issues of Wild Fibers magazine, because that's my favorite.
Did you get a lot of supplies for your own weaving?
Some I might use for weaving. Most of what I bought was either for knitting or crocheting, just because I don't really weave yet. I think actually what I'm going to do is, I was rethinking what I wanted to do for my first project,
mm-hmm.
and I think what I'm going to do is all that Herdwick roving that I have,
yeah.
I'm just going to weave it into kind of a really simple, fluffy, chunky, like bath mat kind of thing.
Cool.
Because Herdwick is going to be good for that about it, and that's about it. So, even though I love it, and they're the most adorable sheep, and the only one that might give them the run for their money is the Valet Blacknose.
Which is also great for bath mats.
Yeah. One of the other great things that I found at the Espanola Valley Fiber Arts Center was some locally hand-spun single-ply bison yarn.
Yes.
Oh, I was very, very happy to find that. But I kind of got a tip-off of that one because of one of the people I follow on Instagram, Mr. Woolly Bear. He works for Lion Brand in New York, and he and his partner or husband, I'm not sure, were actually kind of in the same general area that I was about a month before. So I bought enough to make a hat, and then I had a little bit left over, so I made some little mini hand warmers to use it all up. So I didn't waste it. It's very barren, but very pretty, and it's just so different than Kentucky. The people that I stayed with in Abiquiu were very, very nice, and I have told them to look me up if they ever come to Kentucky, and the wife of the husband and wife said that she's now more interested in coming to see Kentucky now.
Now that you dispelled the myths.
Well, I'm not sure if that's what I did, but I was talking about how beautiful it is. They're very outdoorsy, and they like to hike and go rafting and all kinds of stuff, so I was like, you can do all that stuff in Kentucky, and there's beautiful trails and parks and all that kind of stuff.
So did you already talk about the indigo?
I bought a lot of yarn. I bought some hand-spun, hand-dyed with indigo yarn at Espanola Valley Fiber Art Center as well. That's becoming a shawl called the Wombat Shawl.
So Brix, I guess this week's hashtag and Brix's new superhero name is Indigo Wombat.
I am the Indigo Wombat. It's a German designer, Elke Becker. There's a pattern in German and there's a pattern in English. It was kind of a different, it's a very interesting construction, so that's kind of one reason why I wanted to do it. I'm almost done with the first section. It's a 3x3 rib that you do, basically. Hopefully that'll be done this coming week, then I can move on to the second part. Except, of course, I started a new project today. I'm trucking on through pretty quickly because it's crochet, so it goes a little bit faster. Using Noro Transitions yarn that I bought at Miriam's Well. And it's very soft and squishy, and I'm making a big chunky shawl that will go to someone.
Now, one of the things that you took with you was a skein of Tink yarn.
Yes.
In the colorway
Desert Rodeo. You know, I didn't even cast on while I was there. I was just kind of looking for inspiration, and finally I was kind of inspired by I went to the Taos Pueblo, which is the oldest continually inhabited pueblo in the Southwest. People have lived there for over 1,000 years continuously, unlike a lot of the other ones which got abandoned or whatever. And this is, I mean, these are even the multi-story pueblos that you kind of see the ruins of, but they're still functioning and people live in them and everything.
That's amazing.
It was really kind of awesome. So that's kind of kicked off my mind thinking, but I kind of settled on a pattern called the Abiquiu hat. It's kind of was inspired by the rocks and the cliffs around Abiquiu and the Abiquiu Pueblo as well. And the color kind of is almost the same color as a Pueblo, that kind of adobe mud color.
So tell us about the Tink yarn, like the actual yarn itself.
So we got two yarns from Tink to kind of check out. The one that I used is their worsted yarn, which is a 100% superwash merino. It is 4-ply. Very kind of squishy and lofty, not very tightly spun, and it's very elastic. I found that out when I was knitting with it.
I know that it's got great stitch definition in your finished work.
It's a nice round yarn, which is why it gives the stitch definition. But I really liked more so the color. Like, once I just started knitting with the color and seeing how that worked, I was like, this is just the perfect color.
You did a hat, so have you blocked it?
Yes, it was okay. Blocked, lightly blocked. Well, I did soak it, but then I let it dry flat. I know a lot of people block on balloons mm-hmm. or on something round. I just let it flat block because it's kind of a modified broken rib. I kind of called it a slip stitch broken rib, 3x1 rib as opposed to a 1x1 broken rib. It has a lot of elasticity in it, so it didn't really need to be super blocked. Plus, it fits a lot of different sized heads. Like, I have a really large head and a lot of knitting patterns don't fit, but this one fits my head, and it fits pretty much...
It fit my freakishly small head.
And it, I mean, it's fit pretty much everybody that I've asked to try it on, so...
Ah, I tried on used hat? You didn't
tell me. I've been wearing it since it's a little...
So it got chilly here. So have you noticed any difference in the yarn from knitting through to with wear?
Actually, not really. It's holding up well.
There's not a lot of pilling.
I'm not, I mean...
I mean, there's a little bit of a halo.
Kind of create a little bit of a halo, but it's merino, and it's not a super tight ply mm-hmm. and spin, so I'm not too worried about it. And it's a hat, so I don't think it's going to get a ton of wear. Yeah, I mean, so far it's held up well. It springs back into shape well. I've noticed it's stretching a little bit with continued wear, but not much. It's pretty lightweight.
Yeah, it is.
It's warm, so because it's not so tightly spun and it's a little bit lighter weight, there's a lot of air in there and it's nice and lofty and warm.
Thank you for all your hard work on that.
Yes, so we will be releasing that pattern soon.
And for those of you listening, there is a giveaway this week. As Brick mentioned, we had two skeins of Tink yarn. This is hand-dyed yarn from Tink Yarn Company in Nevada.
Las Vegas.
Yes. And City of Sin and Stitches. So the other one is a sock weight yarn. It's a lovely blue color. I will post pictures of that in the show notes.
Yes, if you like tonal yarn, this is the way to go. Because it's not super solid, which I actually like. It's more tonal. Mm. So you get a little more variation, but it's very subtle. Hashtag give me that tink.
All right. So if you're listening to the podcast and you're interested in winning the giveaway, one skein of hand-dyed tink yarn, and there's a little measuring tape and some other goodies in there. Follow Ballyhoo Fiber Emporium on Instagram. Hashtag give me that tink.
Win the goodies.
We are very OCD, very rule bound.
Yeah, totally. We're always worried about rules.
So tell me about your bison. You designed two projects.
Well, I did technically design that, I guess. It's kind of a really basic hat, though. I wanted something that I could knit that was going to fit my head well and still show off the really rustic nature of the yarn.
It is rustic.
I mean, it's a single ply, hand spun, bulky weight. So it's very different. It's kind of a little nubby and it's kind of thick and thin, and it's, that was another reason why I had to have it.
It's fluffier than it looked.
It's still thick and squishy.
Yeah.
Still, there was quite a bit of guard hair in it, so I kind of feel that. It's a little scratchy. That's the way it was spun. Quite a bit of vegetable matter in it as well.
I noticed that.
But it's better than it was before I blocked it.
Yikes.
So this is softer than it was before.
So not a lot of picking and washing, just...
I think it just kind of came out of the desert and call it a day.
All right.
I still love it, and it's just kind of a simple 2x2 rib with kind of a 3-point decrease on it. I believe I knitted a little tighter at the base with a size 9 when I cast on. Just did a couple rows, I think maybe 5 in the smaller needle, and then switched to a 10.5 and knit the rest of the hat. Maybe if people are interested, I'll get that pattern written up so that we can release that one as well.
Perhaps. Sure.
And I made some little mitts to go with it, so I'll write a little pattern for the mitts as well. It doesn't have to be bison yarn. It could be nice, whatever kind of bulky weight yarn that you have. I started working on trying to spin thicker yarn. I haven't really been in the mood to spin much lately. I had started spinning some stuff before leaving. I bought some Rolags from the Woolly Witch. The colorway that I was working on is at the Hand of the King, I believe. It's inspired by the Game of Thrones. So it's like this really pretty black and dark purple with little bits of silver thread. Like, ooh. Stellina in it. Or Angelina, I think that's what it is.
Okay.
One of them. I can never remember which one's which, because I don't use them that often. But kind of working on making some thicker yarns. Did Fiber Share.
I did.
Okay. That's the one that I did, but there's some other ones too, so that's why I was curious. Yeah. There's like You and Me Fiber Swap. My partner from last time, Ocean, she got 2 skeins of Ballyhoo Fiber Emporium hand-spun yarn, and she just made something out of one of them.
Bluebird of Happiness, yes. Which is kind of a misnomer because it's purple.
Well, it had blue in it, too.
Did it?
Yeah, I remember it was blue and
purple. Oh, you sent her the American You.
Yes.
For some reason, I thought it was Precious Plum.
No. I left Precious Plum for you.
Well, actually, I'm sending Precious Plum to Lithuania.
Oh, so Precious Plum is going elsewhere.
Precious Plum is traveling the world.
I thought that was so interesting, like it.
Yeah, me too. I mean, it's nice to just even get to know one new person.
Especially all the way in Lithuania.
I know.
What do I...
Are you doing it?
Is that where my sheets came from? No, those were Latvian.
Latvian sheets. How are the sheets, by the way?
They're still quite delightful. They hold up to the dogs a lot better. So,
do you think that's because they're handmade?
I think it's because it's linen instead of cotton.
Oh, okay.
So I'm working on my indigo wombat.
You are?
With hand spun.
Are you going to use the shawl as a cape for when you caper?
Maybe. I don't know if it's going to be big enough. It's pretty big, though.
But... I see indigo wombat as like a Deadpool type. Very salt of the earth. Very animated. On a mission.
Colorful.
Yes.
We talked about this before, just how much we enjoy working with handspun.
Amen.
As opposed to commercial.
Yes.
Sometimes I'll put commercial with handspun, but I still just prefer that feeling of handspun.
You know, I was thinking about doing that with this shawl, actually. I had, I think, one skein of commercial that I was going to sandwich in between. And ultimately, when I was looking at the yarns, I just decided to go with this.
Sometimes it doesn't fit in as well.
I'm starting with this hand-spun Shetland Fin Cormo, natural colored with bamboo. And then I'm going to transition. I have two short skeins, and I'm not sure what order I'm going to put them in. The verb fiber with Shetland fin corner mow.
The blue one that you did?
So some of it's light blue and some of it's dark blue. And it's a gradient color and super pretty. And then I have natural tease water. But this yarn is the first thing that I've made really for myself out of hand spun. I think I made like a hat, but that's it. And then I give everything away or sell the yarn. And this particular yarn that I'm using now, when my dad was visiting last summer, he helped me make it.
Is it bad that I missed my truck when I was in New Mexico?
No.
Do you know what I got stuck driving? A minivan.
Are you serious?
I made reservations to get a truck there because I was told by some of the people I was staying with that I'd be driving on like backcountry roads to get to their house and all that, and I needed some good ground clearance because of the snow and the mud and all that. I am between my flights about to catch my connection flight in Denver, and I get a call saying, we don't have anything right now. Everything's gone. So they thought that I was getting a pickup truck because I needed to move stuff. And I was like, no, I need it because I need the ground clearance. So they're like, well, we can get you a minivan or a cargo van. And I was like, I guess I'll take the minivan.
Well, yeehaw.
Hey, it handled all right, surprisingly enough. And
you got to play DVDs for your luggage.
Well, I didn't have one of those. What was actually a little more aggravating is the people that I stayed with have a Toyota Tundra just like mine.
Did you try to get into it?
I did ride in it. The first night that I stayed with them, we went to Ghost Ranch and went to go see David Mirabal, I believe. He's a Native American flute player.
Oh.
And he's a Grammy Award winner and all that kind of stuff. So there was like music and dancing and all kinds of stuff. So it was kind of cool.
Awesome.
And it was just kind of down the road from where they lived. So that was convenient.
So did you stay with people you know, or did you do like Airbnb?
I did Airbnb in both places. The place I stayed at in Santa Fe was a little casita, little guest house behind the main house.
Uh-huh.
So I didn't really have any interaction with the people there. But then the people that I stayed with in Abiquiu, it was just renting a room in their house, and I was actually their very first guest.
Aww. So did they try really hard to make you happy?
They were the sweetest, nicest people that you could ever hope for. They made me breakfast like every morning, and we made dinner a few times together, and they wanted to make sure, and they that I was okay and was, you know, if I needed anything, directions and all kinds of stuff. They were the nicest people, and they live on about 2 acres out kind of in the middle of nowhere.
Just up your alley.
There's a cow farm not far, and they have some horses as well. So in the morning you go out, and the horses are used to getting treats, so they come up to the fence in the morning, and you give them apples and carrots and stuff. And they had two little dogs that were kind of like mine, and so we went hiking one day, and just me and the dog. Taos was really pretty. It was too touristy and congested for my liking, but geographically it was beautiful. There's a big bridge that goes over a gorge there, what they call the gorge. And just stood there and watched the sunset. And I got to reconnect with a friend of mine from elementary and middle school that I haven't seen in like 11 years or something that. So she lives in Taos now, and we got to reconnect and spend the day together, which was fun.
I'm glad you had a good trip.
It was different. It was my very first trip doing kind of everything on my own.
I realized this year that if I took it easy and sheared one sheep every day, it would take me an entire month to shear my flock.
Yeah. That's only one sheep a day.
Yeah.
Which is a bit more manageable than trying to do 20 in a day.
True. But I think my max is 5. I can't handle more than 5 anymore.
You know, I've learned pretty much all my sheep stuff from you.
Mm-hmm.
And how you do stuff. But I've also seen other farmers that we kind of know generally together and how they do it. And the way that all of these people are doing it is so different than the way that these big commercial farmers are doing it. Because, I mean, these are meat sheep. They're not fleece sheep that we were shearing at the school. So just seeing how their fleeces are not protected, it's just...
Because the fiber isn't valued.
To them, yes. Yeah. So it's just, it was a much bigger eye-opening experience. And the funny thing is, most of the people that were there at the shearing school were fiber sheep people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you learn a lot at each one, so. I was very happy to use the Tink yarns. It was a nice yarn to work with. It's nice to work with different stuff every once in a while.
All right. Thanks, Brick, for talking to us about New Mexico and the fabulous fibers you found there, and also for sharing your pattern and yarn review with us. Again, look for that Tink giveaway on the podcast and under the show notes for episode 17, the lost episode. No longer lost. You've heard it here. You've heard it. So, now the news from Ballyhoo Farm, and so much news there is. So I have a feeling I'll be catching you guys up slowly over time. First, a giant thank you to all those of you who have approached me either via email or Instagram or in person at various fiber festivals this year and asked me where the podcast went and when I'll be doing a new one. I really do sincerely apologize for leaving it so long. I have missed you all, and clearly you've missed me, so thank you so much for your encouragement and support and your continued interest. We will be having more episodes, I promise. Next week, I believe, cross your fingers, I will have an interview with Lori, who is Mooflower on Etsy and on Instagram. She's a fabulous stitch marker designer who has worked with Terry from Bags by Terry. In fact, that's how we met. But that's a story for another week. So what have I been up to since the last podcast episode? So much. Well, I had spring semester of school, of course, and that ended quite well, actually, despite my angst and lack of caring. I had one class that I was going to fail, and I was fine with that, believe it or not. It's kind of embarrassing to say, but really not, considering all that's happened at that institution. And I ended up pulling a D+ out of that class, which is the worst grade I have gotten since like middle school or maybe high school. And it wasn't in math either, which is really terrible. It was in a 100 level lit class. And I did the reading, I just didn't participate in any of the discussions, etc. But at the last minute, I decided to care, and I got a grade that's good enough for credit. And I was trying to decide whether or not to go back this fall. And the registrar wanted to know if I was coming back this fall because of my student loans. And I didn't know because I couldn't get a straight answer from my advisor as to how many credits I needed to graduate. Well, last week I found out why. She was trying to just go ahead and get me graduated. And it is looking like, finally, I will get my bachelor's in December. I will not walk. I'm completely fine with that because, frankly, after everything that's gone down, the only reason I can think of to walk would be to flip everybody off, and that's highly inappropriate. So we just won't do that. But I will get my little piece of paper that says I know things, and that's fantastic. She had me speak with the director of the sustainability program, who also teaches botany. And together we sat down and reviewed what it is I do as a fiber artist and podcaster and mentor. And he gave me 18 credit hours worth of things. So I just have to do my senior capstone, which I'll do second session over the summer. And I should be done. I might need one more elective in the fall. So that's a good feeling. And that means more time for podcasts with school off my plate. But it also means that you need to buy more yarn from me because I'll have student loans to pay back. So that's the catch. Anyhow, I will not be getting a minor in sustainability, nor will I be getting any kind of degree in music, which is unfortunate. I will just be getting a bachelor's in general studies, which is ridiculous. But anyway. So school will be done. Hooray. I did some fiber festivals. The first one was April 2nd, the Kentucky Green Living Festival in Somerset, Kentucky. This was a new festival geared towards education and sustainability and permaculture, and it was so much fun. It was a fantastic day. I taught two workshops, one on raising sheep for wool and the other on fiber arts. My fiber arts one, I had some room in, and it wasn't quite as interactive as I would have liked. I'm not sure what it is about fiber arts that scares people off. I took a drop spindle. I took a top roll, a Turkish, my wheel, and some cards, hand cards, and needle felting supplies with me to class. And people were kind of timid about trying it. But there was a child in there who greatly enjoyed needle felting and did some spinning as well. So he was rewarded with some little felted animals at the end. And everybody had a great time. But the thing that really blew my mind was my first class, Raising Sheep for Wool, was standing room only. There were people, I taught in the afternoon, both classes, and there were people coming up to me all morning saying how excited they were because they heard I was going to be there and they couldn't wait to take the class. So I was a little intimidated. It was the first workshop I've taught. Outside of like, you know, a specific fiber art, it was the first general class that I had taught like that. And, second. I taught one last summer, same topic. And so I walked into the room knowing all these people were there to see me, and I had a slideshow all ready to go and handouts and all kinds of things. Well, the projector didn't plug into my laptop, so that was a disaster. And I was like, can everybody just get in the middle of the room and look at my screen? But each workshop was 45 minutes and they went really well, and hopefully they'll have me back next year. I really enjoyed teaching them. I finished Small Ruminants for Profit School, and my mentees are doing very well, April in particular. I helped her shear her fin sheep, if you remember, and she did actually enter one of the fleeces in a fleece competition, and she took second. So well done, April. Very proud of you and your girls. What else? I did Greencastle Fiber Festival this year. I really did enjoy that, and I will be back next year, I think. The day before Greencastle, I was on Instagram and saw that Joanna of Knit Spins Farm was, also going to attend. And I said, oh, I'll come find you. So we spoke and then we exchanged rovings, and, lo and behold, a couple of weeks later, I got an email from a woman who had listened to Joanna's podcast and commissioned some yarn for me. So I spun some wonderful Icelandic for her. Thank you, Karen, out in Colorado. I couldn't be more thrilled, and I love the way the yarn turned out, and so did she, so that was fun. And thank you, Joanna, for the shout-out. A similar thing happened in at the Kentucky Green Living Fair. I had a young lady walk up to me and say that she'd been looking for my booth because someone she knew in West Virginia told her that she had to find me because I have excellent fiber. I'm not really sure how these people are getting to know me, but thank you. It's amazing and encouraging, and I so love meeting all these new wonderful fiber friends. I met lots and lots of fiber friends at Kentucky Sheep and Fiber Festival. Marianne and Sonia, of course, who are also members of the Kentucky Sheep and Goat Development Association, were there in the livestock tent with me, and Sarah Dunham from Pumpkins Patch at Equinox Farms, and who always seems to be my neighbor in the livestock tent every year. We don't plan it that way, but it happens, so that was fun. Made several new friends, saw several repeat customers. Thank you for that. Oh, that was the most extraordinary thing that happened at Greencastle also. A lady walked up to me and said, I don't know if you remember me. I bought some stuff from you last year at Hoosier Hills. And I said, yeah, I remember you. She said, I owe you money. I know of no other industry where a customer from last year would come up and give you cash for something. I had discounted some yarn for her because I desperately wanted it to go to a good home, and she came and made up the balance this year. So thank you also for that. That just blew me away. Wonderful, wonderful people in the fiber community. And so excited to see repeat customers, some of whom bought from the same family and some who bought different sheep than they had had before. I got to unveil my new logo this year, which of course is on the website for the Fiber Emporium. Lots of fun, lots of good comments on that. Many people asking if they could take pictures. And I got to show off my March cowl, which I did with Terry, the Drachenfels shawl. And that's entirely out of the hand spun that I did last year. And what else? This has been the year of the shawl. Many shawls have been made. The latest is blocking right now, except it rained this afternoon, so I'm a little concerned about it. But I think it will be fine once it dries. Speaking of shawls, Brick finished the Shepherdess shawl pattern. That is now available on the Ballyhoo Fiber Emporium website in the shop. It is available as a kit for $70. You get two skeins of hand-dyed cashmere dyed with greener shades and exclusive colorways that we designed ourselves. That's right, our very own selves. It was a challenge. It was wonderful. It was a grueling day of dyeing, and then Brick did some over-dyeing on some of them. But there are limited quantities, and once they're gone, they're gone. We're not planning to repeat this particular project, so go get them while you can. Again, the Shepherdess Shawl Kit, $70, two skeins of hand-dyed cashmere yarn, and the pattern. It's a wonderful airy shawl. Having worn it both in the summer and in the winter, I can say that it is warm. It is light, it is cozy, it is luxurious, it's just enough. So, go get that while you can. We had lambing. It was special this year. 19 lambs, 16 living. There were two stillborns, a bottle lamb, and one that we had to put down. So, if you remember me talking about, and I don't remember if I've talked about this before, if I have, I'm very sorry. You may have remembered me talking about Dorothy, who I picked up last fall, that coincidence, small fiber world. I knew who those sheep were, and Dorothy was a ewe that I had wanted to purchase anyway. Well, it turns out that Dorothy was bred to her son. It also turns out that Dorothy carries a recessive gene that causes cleft palate and parrot mouth. And these disfigurements render a lamb essentially unable to have a normal quality of life. She had twin ram lambs this year. I went out and one of them was fine. His name is Oz. He's adorable. He's almost as big as his mama and he's only 2 months old. I have to say this is my biggest lamb crop. Most lambs and just biggest framed lambs that I've ever had. I'm very excited about them. And they're happy and healthy and bouncy and beautiful. So Oz's brother was born with both of these deformities, cleft palate and parrot mouth. He also had some neurological problems. And after about an hour of trying to bottle feed him, despite his adorableness and his clear interest in the world, he was unable to stand or to hold his head up for extended periods of time. And we determined that the best course of action was to euthanize him. Now, it was a weekend, of course, and I don't remember if it was a holiday or not, but I couldn't find a vet that was open that would treat him. Not a lot of sheep vets in my area, my old area anyway. And so we made the difficult decision to dispatch him with a gun. Although three shots were fired, the first one did him in. And it was all very humane. Again, it does seem cruel, only an hour old, but he would not have been able to suckle normally. When he was weaned, he would not have ever been able to graze because of the deformities in his mouth, and he would not possibly have been able to walk ever. So it was better that he die quickly than suffer needlessly. Oz is fine. I will rebreed Dorothy this fall to an unrelated ram. And if she shows similar problems in lambing next year, she will go for slaughter. We don't slaughter fiber people don't slaughter ewes very often, and it has nothing to do with her age or anything like that. It has to do with the fact that I can't trust another producer to make as sound a decision as I would. Meaning, when I contacted the original owner, it turned out that this problem has shown with other lambs that Dorothy has had in the past by different rams. And that means that it is her that carries this recessive gene. So not entirely trusting that original owner's breeding plan, I'm going to give her one more shot. But since this has happened before, I know to look out for it. And if it does happen again, that's a third time. Now, you don't want to pass that on in any way, shape, or form. So obviously her sons have to be castrated. I would not recommend breeding her daughters. But what do you do about that? You know, they don't perform a spay surgery, an invasive surgery on sheep. So she needs to go for slaughter. She has very nice fiber, and she's a lovely ewe. She's quite friendly, but I can't take the risk that a ram would get to her, and I really, you know, it's unfair to bring lives into this world that have to deal with problems like that. So that was the first lamb, and it was pretty horrible. Then one of Brick's ewes, all of Brick's ewes, lambed in the middle of the night, but one of Brick's ewes had two stillborns. One was born whole and looked normal, looked healthy, but was dead at birth. And the one that followed, the twin, was only slightly bigger than my fist. And apparently I'm not the only person to have that happen this year. The most common cause is that the ewe rebred. So what happened, probably, was she was bred by an Icelandic ram before leaving Marianne's farm, came to my farm and was turned out with Tim, and then Tim bred her again. So you have two lambs in different stages of development, and unfortunately the body said to expel them both, and neither one survived. It's unfortunate, but it happens, and it's unfortunate that it happened on our farm, especially on Brick's first lambing. But his other two ewes had twins, and they are bouncy and happy and healthy and rotten and awesome. And then the last lamb born was Seuss. I have only had two bottle lambs in 8 years. The first one, I lost the ewe to ketosis, and this one was Juniper's. So it's Cinnabon's grandson. Cinnabon had twin ewes this year, and we moved her to a new farm, but Juniper stayed behind because I didn't know if she was bred or not, and it was her first time. Well, sure enough, she went and had one lamb, one single, and I looked out the window and saw her trucking around the pasture with afterbirth hanging out of her, and I thought, what in the world is going on? So I went out there, and there was a little lamb crying and chasing her, and she wanted nothing to do with it. I tried to put them in a pen together. She was mean to him, really mean to him, and he tried hard, man. He's stubborn. It's probably the only reason he's alive. But ultimately, I decided that even were I to move her, were I to get them to bond and then move them, she may reject him in the new pasture again, and I wouldn't be there at the time to see what was going on. So he became my second bottle lamb ever. And it is not as cute as it sounds. It is a whole lot of work. It's constant. I mean, it's like having a human baby. He had to be fed every 2 hours for the first, I don't know, 4 or 5 days. Then it was every 4. Then it was every 6. And that's all night long, folks. There is no sleeping through the night. He wore diapers because he had to go everywhere with me. And so I learned how to diaper a baby with one hand holding him on my knee, standing up. He went pottery painting, he went to my massage, he went to school several times, so now he's had French, photography, psychology, and botany, and an advising appointment to boot. He's very learned. He's adorable, he's been to 2 fiber festivals, everybody loves him, and now he's on the farm. He is just over a month old. He celebrated his 1 month birthday on May 30th, which was Memorial Day, by helping me shear 13 sheep. For more about Seuss, he's all over Instagram, he's all over Facebook, and of course you can come out and visit him. So that was lambing. Let's see. I guess I'll give you an update on the other creatures. Zeke is fine. Horses are fine. Chickens are fine. Percy the duck is fine. The peacocks are lost. They laid 6 eggs and then took off and have not been seen since. And I think I lost the eggs as well. I tried to incubate them, but I don't think any of them made it. So no more peacocks for me. I do still have some feathers left from Archer if anybody's interested, but this is the end of the run for peacocks for the foreseeable future. I loved them and they were great birds, but you know, they're expensive and it kind of hurts a little bit to lose them. I guess I kind of have random hopes that they'll show up one day. Probably not, though. I don't know. The biggest deal that happened in the past couple months was I found a house and moved. So Ballyhoo Farm, I moved the whole farm, is now in Baghdad, Kentucky. And you can learn more about that at the website, of course, or on Facebook, or on Instagram. It was a good move. It was a long time coming. It was time, past time. And it's been good so far. I mean, in so far as moving to the country ever is, it's crazy. I moved 50 sheep, 2 horses, and a dog, and a duck. So Daisy stayed behind at the old farm. And she is going to be a non-working dog now. She was overall just too rambunctious for the sheep. So, and I think that she was started too late and not trained well enough. And with being in school, I just didn't have the resources to be able to help her be that kind of dog. So she's a pet and she's happy, I hope, and healthy. Oh, I also moved 2 cats. Aria's doing fine, but Widget, not so much. He's been hiding for about a week, and I'm starting to get kind of worried about him. So send Widget good thoughts that he wants to come out and explore, and that he feels settled and fine. It pretty much shocked me, because I've moved Widget in the past, and he's adapted beautifully, but I had never moved Aria, and she had never been away from her brother. So to have her do so marvelously well is kind of surprising. The new property boasts a general store. It's been there a while, since 1929, and it's very, very exciting. It's about 18 by 30 square feet, or feet in either direction. I don't know, length and width. I'm not good at math. Whatever you call those measurements, it's about 18 by 30. And I have it all set up. So the Fiber Emporium now has a physical home. You can see pictures of it on Instagram. I'm very, very excited about it. I can teach workshops now. I have a place to consign for people. I have been picking and skirting fleeces on the porch, and it's wonderful. No mess in the house. All of my stash is put away. I have display windows and built-in shelves, and it's absolutely lovely. So I, again, got 13 fleeces off on Monday, and I still have about 9 more to go, but this weekend is Hoosier Hills Fiber Festival. Everybody should go out and see it. And I'm planning to go up on Saturday. I'll be there from about 10:30 to 4 p.m., so if you see me, say hi. I'll be around. I'll probably wear a name badge from one of the other festivals. And I will not be vending, but I will be showing. I think I'm going to show 3 fleeces and a skein of hand-spun Icelandic, and then they're having a photo competition as well, so I think I might enter that. The new place does not have internet yet, and I have terrible cell phone service, so if you reach out to me, please don't be offended if I don't respond immediately. You're probably looking at a 1.5 to 2 day wait at this point, and I feel terrible about that. If you have my number, text messages get through. If you don't, just be patient, please. I'm working on it. Any of you who live in the country or have lived in the country know how deplorable modern conveniences are out there. I think that's about it, at least for now. Again, I'm sure that I'll be sharing more of the story with you as time goes on, but for now, that will have to hold you over. because I need to upload this before I have to go back and feed Seuss another bottle. Thank you again for your continued support and listening, and I hope that you continue to check back. I will be posting podcasts with more regularity now, and be sure to go on Instagram and follow ballyhoo.fiber.emporium to enter that giveaway. Again, hashtag gimme that tink. Thanks again. Have a great week, and remember, spin everywhere.